डिस्कोर्सेज बाय भगवान श्री रजनीश जी ऑन विज्ञान भैरव तंत्र श्री 5th लेक्चर नंबर 3 डेट 24 फरवरी 1973 वुडलैंड बॉम्बे।
सिविलाइजेशन इज अ ट्रेनिंग How to become unreal. Tantra is the reverse process. How to prevent yourself from becoming unreal. And if you have already become unreal, how to touch the reality which is hidden within you? How to contact it again? How to be real? The first thing to be understood is how we go on becoming unreal. Once that process is understood, many things change immediately. The very understanding becomes a mutation. Man is born undivided. Neither he is a body nor a mind. He is born undivided, one. Individual. He is both body and mind. Or, even that is wrong to say that he is both. He is body mind. Body and mind are two aspects of his being, not two divisions, two polarities. Of something which we may call life, energy, anything, X, Y, Z. But body and mind are not two things. But the very process of civilization, education, culture, conditioning, it starts with a division. Everyone is taught you are two, not one. And then, of course, one begins to be identified with the mind and not with the body. The very thinking process becomes your center. And thinking process is just a periphery. It is not the center. Because you can exist without thinking. Once you existed without thinking. Thinking is not a necessity to exist. If you go deep in meditation, you will be, and there will be no thinking. If you become unconscious, you will be, but there will be no thinking. Moving into deep sleep, you will be, but there will be no thinking. Thinking is just on the periphery. Your being is somewhere else, deeper than thinking. But we are being taught continuously that you are two, body and mind, and really, you are the mind, and you possess the body. The mind becomes the master, and body becomes the slave, and you go on struggling against the body. This creates a rift, a gap, and that gap is the problem. All neurosis is born out of that gap. All anxiety is born out of that gap. Your being is rooted in your body, and your body is not just something separate from existence. It is part of it. Your body is the whole universe. It is not something limited, finite. You may not have observed, but try to observe where your body really ends. Where your skin ends, you think your body ends? If the sun, so far away, just goes dead, instantly you will be dead here. If the sun rays are not coming, you will be no more here. Your body cannot exist without the sun there, so far away. The sun and you are somehow deeply related. The sun must be included in your body, otherwise you cannot exist. You are part of its rays. In the morning, you see flowers open. Their opening is really the rising of the sun. In the night they will close. Their closing is setting of the sun. They are just spread rays. You exist here because there, so far away, the sun exists. Your skin is not really your skin. Your skin goes on spreading. Even the sun is included. You are breathing. You can breathe because the air is there. The atmosphere is there. Each moment you exhale, inhale the atmosphere in and out. For a single moment, if there is no air, you will be dead. Your breath is your life. If your breath is your life, then the whole atmosphere is part of you. You cannot exist without it. So where really your body ends? Where is the limit? There is no limit. If you observe, if you go deep, you will find there is no limit. The limit of the universe is your body limit. The whole universe is involved in you. So your body is not just your body, it is your universe. And you are grounded in it. Your mind too cannot exist without the body. It is part of it, a process of it. Division is destructive. And with the division, you are bound to get identified with the mind. Because you think, and without thinking there is no division. And you think, you get identified with thinking. Then you feel as if you possess the body. This is a complete reversal of the truth. You are not possessing the body. Neither body is possessing you. There are not two things. Your existence is one, a deep harmony of opposite poles. But opposite poles are not divided, they are joined together. Only then they can become opposite poles. And the opposition is good, it gives challenge, gives stamina, creates energy, it is dialectical. If really you are one without opposite poles within it, you will be dull and dead. These two opposite poles, body and mind, give you life. They are opposite and at the same time complementary. And basically and ultimately one. A one current of energy runs in both. But once we get identified with the thinking process, we think that we are centered in the head. If your legs are cut, you will not feel that you are cut. You will say, my legs are cut. But if your head is cut, you are cut. You are murdered. We go on thinking, if you close your eyes and feel where you are, immediately you will feel you are in your head. You are not there. Because when for the first moment you entered life in your mother's womb, when the male and female atoms met, there was no head. But life started. You were there and there were no head. That first meeting of two alive cells, you were created. The head will come later on. But your being was there. Where is that being? It is not in your head. Really, it is nowhere or everywhere in your body. It is nowhere. You cannot pinpoint where it is. And the moment you pinpoint it, you miss the whole thing. It is everywhere. Your life is everywhere. It is spread all over you. And not only all over you. If you follow it, you will have to go to the very ends of the universe. It is everywhere. With the identification that I am my mind, everything becomes false. You become unreal because this identity is false. This has to be broken. Tantra techniques are to break down this identity. The effort of the tantra is to make you headless, uncentered. Everywhere or nowhere. And why humanity, human beings become false and unreal with the mind? Because mind is an epiphenomenon, a process which is necessary, useful, but secondary. A process which consists of words, not of realities. The word love is not love. The word God is not God. But mind consists of words, verbal process. And then love itself becomes less significant than the word love. For the mind, the word is more significant. God becomes less significant than the word God. For the mind, it is so. Words become more meaningful, significant. They become primary. And we start living in words. And the more you live in words, the more shadowy you will become. And you will go on missing the reality, which is not words. Reality is existence. Living in the mind is as if someone is living in a mirror. In the night, if you go to a lake and the lake is silent and there are no ripples, the lake becomes a mirror. You can look at the moon in the lake, but that moon is false, just a reflection. The reflection comes from the real, but the reflection is not real. Mind is just a reflecting phenomenon. The reality is reflected in it, but reflections are not real. And if you get caught into reflections, you will miss reality completely. That's why with the mind, with mind reflections, everything is wavering. A slight wave, a slight wind will disturb your mind. Reality is not disturbed, but the mind is disturbed by anything. Mind is a reflex phenomena, and we are living in minds. Tantra says, come down. Descend from your thrones. Come down from your heads. Forget the reflections and move towards the reality. All the techniques which we are discussing are concerned with this, how to be away from the mind so that you can move into reality. Now we will discuss the techniques. First technique, O lotus-eyed one, sweet of touch, when singing, seeing, tasting, be aware you are and discover the ever-living. We are living, but not aware that we are, or that we are living. There is no self-remembering. You are eating, or you are taking a bath, or you are taking a walk. You are not aware that you are while walking. Everything is only you are not. The trees, the houses, the traffic, everything is. You are aware of everything around you, but you are not aware of your own being, that you are. You may be aware of the whole world, but if you are not aware of yourself, that awareness is false. Why? Because your mind can reflect everything, your mind cannot reflect you. If you are aware of yourself, you have transcended the mind. Your self-remembering cannot be reflected in your mind because you are behind the mind. It can reflect only things which are in front of it. Just you can see others, but you cannot see yourself. Your eyes can see everyone, but your eyes cannot see themselves. If you want to see yourself, you will need a mirror. Only in the mirror you can see yourself, but then you will have to stand in front of the mirror. If your mind is a mirror, it can reflect the whole world. It cannot reflect you because you cannot stand before it. You are always behind, hidden behind the mirror. This technique says, while doing anything, singing, seeing, tasting, be aware you are, and discover the ever-living, and discover within yourself the current, the energy, the life, the ever-living. But we are not aware of ourselves. Gurdjieff used self-remembering as a basic technique in the West. That self-remembering is derived from this sutra. Whole Gurdjieffian system is based on this one sutra. Remember yourself. Whatsoever you are doing, it is very difficult. It looks very easy. You will go on forgetting. Even for 3 or 4 seconds, you cannot remember yourself. You will have a feeling that you are remembering, and suddenly you have moved to some other thought. Even this thought that, okay, I am remembering myself, you have missed. Because this thought is not self-remembering. In self-remembering there will be no thought. You will be completely empty. And self-remembering is not a mental process. It is not that you say, yes, I am. Saying, yes, I am, you have missed. This is a mind thing. This is a mental process, I am. Feeling of I am, not the word I am. Don't verbalize. Just feel that you are. Don't think, feel. Try it. It is difficult, but if you go on insisting, it happens. Walking, remember you are. And have the feeling of your being, not any thought, not any idea. Just feel. I touch your hand. Or I put my hand on your head. Don't verbalize. Just feel the touch. And in that feeling, not only feel the touch, but also feel the touched one. Then your consciousness becomes double-arrowed. You are walking under the trees. The trees are there, the breeze is there, the sun is rising. This is the world all around you. You are aware of it. Stand for a moment suddenly and remember that you are, but don't verbalize. Just feel. you are. This non-verbal feeling, even for a single moment, will give you a glimpse which no LSD can give, a glimpse which is of the real. For a single moment, you are thrown back to the center of your being. You are behind the mirror. You have transcended the world of reflections. You are existential. And you can do it anytime. It doesn't need any special place, any special time. And you cannot say, I have no time. Eating, you can do it. Taking a bath, you can do it. Moving, sitting, you can do it anytime. Whatsoever you are doing, you can suddenly remember yourself. And then try to continue that glimpse of your being. It will be difficult. One moment you will feel it is there, next moment you have moved away. Some thought has entered, some reflection has come to you, and you have become involved in the reflection. But don't be sad and don't be disappointed. This is so because for lives together we have been concerned with the reflections. This has become a robot-like mechanism. Instantly, automatically, we are thrown to the reflection. But even for a single moment, you can have the glimpse. It is enough for the beginning. And why it is enough? Because you will never get two moments together. Only one moment is with you always. And if you can have the glimpse for a single moment, you can remain in it. Only effort is needed. A continuous effort is needed. Single moment is given to you. You cannot have two moments together, so don't worry about two moments. You will always get one moment. And if you can be aware in one moment, you can be aware for your whole life. Only effort is needed now. And this can be done the whole day. Whenever you remember, remember yourself. O lotus-eyed one, sweet of touch, when singing, seeing, tasting, be aware you are, and discover the ever living. When the sutra says be aware you are, what you will do? Will you remember my name is Ram or Jesus or something else? Will you remember that you belong to such and such a family? Will you remember to such and such tradition and religion? Will you remember to such and such country and caste and creed? Will you remember you are a communist or a Hindu or a Christian? What you will remember? And the sutra says, be aware you are. It simply says you are. No name is needed. No country is needed. Simple existence you are. So don't say to yourself who you are. Don't answer that I am this and that. Simple existence that you are. But it becomes difficult because we never remember simple existence. We always remember something which is just a label, not existence itself. Whenever you think about yourself, you think about your name, religion, country, many things, but never the simple existence that you are. You can practice this, relaxing in a chair or just sitting under a tree. Forget everything and feel this you-are-ness. No Christian, no Hindu, no Buddhist, no Indian, no English, no German. Simply you are. Have a feeling of it. And then it will be easy for you to remember what this Sutta says. Be aware you are and discover the ever-living. And the moment you are aware that you are thrown into the current of the ever-living. The false is going to die. Only the real will remain. That's why we are so much afraid of death. Because the unreal is going to die. The unreal cannot be forever. And we are attached to the unreal, identified with the unreal. You as a Hindu will have to die. You as Ram, Krishna, or Jesus will have to die. You as a communist, as an atheist, theist will have to die. You as a name and form will have to die. And if you are attached to name and form, obviously the fear of death will come to you. But the real, the existential, the basic in you is deathless. Once the form and name are forgotten, once you have a look within to the nameless and formless, you have moved into the eternal. Be aware you are and discover the ever-living. This technique is one of the most helpful. And it has been used for millennia for many teachers, masters. Buddha used it. Mahavir used it. Jesus used it. And in modern times, Gurdjieff used it. Among all the techniques, this is one of the most potential. Try it. It will take time. Months will pass. When Ouspensky was learning with Gurdjieff, 3 months, he had to do much effort, arduous effort, to have a glimpse of what self-remembering is. For continuously 3 months, Ouspensky lived in a secluded house, just doing only one thing, self-remembering. 30 persons started the experiment. And by the end of the first week, 27 has escaped. Only 3 remained. The whole day, they were trying to remember, not doing anything else, just remembering that I am. 27 felt they are going crazy. They felt now the madness is just near. They escaped. They never turned back. They never met Gurdjieff again. Why? As we are really, we are mad. Not remembering who we are, what we are mad. But this madness is taken as sanity. Once you try to go back, try to contact the real, it will look like craziness. It will look like madness. Compared to what we are, it is just the reverse, the opposite. If you feel this is sanity, that will look like madness. But three persisted. One of the three was P.D. Ouspensky. For 3 months they persisted. Only after the first month they started having glimpses of simple being. I am. After the second month, even the I dropped. And they started having glimpses of am-ness. Just being, not even I, because I is also a label. The pure being is not I and thou, it is. And by the third month, even the feeling of amness dissolves, because that feeling of amness is still a word. Even that word dissolve, then you are, and then you know what you are. Before that point comes, you cannot ask, who am I? Or you can go asking continuously, who am I? Just continuously inquiring, who am I? Who am I? And all the answers that will be provided by the mind will be found false, irrelevant. And you go on asking, who am I? Who am I? Who am I? A point comes where you can no more ask the question. All the answers have fallen down, and now the question itself falls down and disappears. And when even the question, who am I, disappears, you know who you are. Gurdjieff tried from the one corner, just try to remember you are. Ramana Maharshi tried from another corner. He made it a meditation to ask, inquire, who am I? And don't believe in any answer that the mind can supply. The mind will say, what nonsense you are asking. You are this. You are that. You are a man. You are a woman. You are educated, uneducated, rich, poor. The mind will supply answers. Go on asking. Don't accept any answer, because all the answers given by the mind are false. They are from the unreal part of you. They are coming from words. They are coming from scriptures. They are coming from conditionings. They are coming from society. They are coming from others. Go on asking. Let this arrow of who am I penetrate deeper and deeper. A moment will come, no answer will come. That is the right moment. Now you are nearing the answer. When no answer comes, you are near the answer, because the mind is becoming silent. Or you have gone far away from the mind. When there will be no answer and a vacuum will be created all around you, your questioning will look absurd. To whom you are questioning? There is no one to answer you. suddenly even your questioning stops. With the questioning, the last part of the mind has dissolved, because this question was also of the mind. Those answers were of the mind, and this question was also of the mind. Both have dissolved. Now you are. Try this. There is every possibility, if you insist, if you persist, this technique can give you a glimpse of the real. And the real is ever living. Second technique, wherever satisfaction is found, in whatever act, actualize this. Wherever satisfaction is found, in whatever act, actualize this. You feel thirsty. You drink water. A subtle satisfaction is attained. Forget the water, forget the thirst. Remain with this subtle satisfaction that you are feeling. Be filled with it. Feel simply satisfied. But the human mind is mischievous. It only feels dissatisfactions, discontents. It never feels satisfaction. It never feels contents. If you are dissatisfied, you will feel it, and you will be filled by it. When you are thirsty, you feel it. You are filled with thirst. You feel it in the throat. You feel it, if it grows, you will feel it all over your body. And a moment will come when it is not that you are thirsty, you will feel you have become the thirst. If you are in a desert and there is no hope of getting water, you will not feel that you are thirsty. You will feel that you have become the thirst. Dissatisfactions are felt. Miseries are felt. Pains are felt. Whenever you suffer, you become the suffering. That's why the whole life becomes a hell. You have never felt the positive, you have always felt the negative. Life is not such a misery as we have made of it. Misery is just our interpretation. A Buddha is happy here and now, in this very life. A Krishna is dancing and playing on his flute. In this very life, here and now, where we are in misery, Krishna is dancing. Life is neither misery, life is neither bliss. Bliss and misery are our interpretations, our attitudes, approaches, how we look at it. It is your mind, how it takes. Remember and analyze your own life. Have you ever taken account of happy moments, of contents, of satisfactions, of blissful glimpses? You have not taken any account. But you have taken every account of your pain, suffering, misery. And you go on accumulating. You are an accumulated hell. And this is your own choice. No one else is forcing you into this hell. This is your own choice. The mind takes the negative, accumulates it, and becomes negative itself. And then this is a self-perpetuating misery. The more negatives you have within the mind, the more negative you become. The more negatives are accumulated, and the similar attracts the similar. And this has been for lives and lives. You miss everything because of your negative approach. This technique gives you a positive approach, a total reversal to the ordinary mind and its process. Wherever satisfaction is found, in whatever act, actualize this. Feel it. Become one with it. Don't take it just as a passing phase. The satisfaction can become a glimpse of a greater positive existence. Everything is just a window. If you become identified with a pain, you are looking from a window. And the window of pain, suffering, opens only towards a hell. If you are one with a satisfactory moment, a blissful moment, an ecstatic moment, you are opening another window. The existence is the same, but your windows are different. Wherever satisfaction is found, in whatever act, actualize this. Wherever. No condition. Wherever. You see a friend, you feel happy. You meet your lover or beloved, you feel happy. Actualize this. Be happiness in that moment. And make that happiness a door. You are changing the mind. And you will start accumulating happiness. And your mind will turn to be positive. And the same world will look different. One Zen monk, Bokoju, is reported to have said, "The world is the same, but nothing is the same, because my mind has changed. Everything remains the same, but nothing is the same, because I am not the same." We go on trying to change the world. And whatsoever you do, the world will remain same, because you remain the same. You can get a bigger house. You can get a bigger car. You can get a more beautiful wife or husband, but nothing will change. The bigger house will not be bigger. The beautiful wife or husband will not be more beautiful. The bigger car will remain the smaller one, because you are the same. Your mind, your approach, your ways of seeing are the same. You go on changing things without changing yourself. So only a miserable person leaves a hut and moves to a palace. But the miserable person remains the same. He was miserable in a hut, now he will be miserable in a palace. This misery may be palatial. But he will be miserable. You go on carrying your misery with you. And wherever you move, you will be with yourself. So no outer change is basically a change. It is just an appearance. You simply feel that there has been change, but there is no change. Only one change, only one revolution, only one mutation is there, and that is if your mind changes from negative to be positive. If your outlook is focused on misery, you live in hell. If your outlook is focused on happiness, the very hell becomes heaven. Try this. This will change your very quality of life. But we are interested in quantity. We are interested how to get more rich. In quantity, not in quality. You can have two houses and two cars, many things, a bigger bank account. Quantity changes, becomes more and more. Your quality remains the same. And richness is not of things. Richness is of the quality of your mind, of your life. Even a poor man can be a rich man, as far as quality is concerned. And even a rich man can be a poor man. Almost always they are. Because a person concerned with things and quantity is totally unaware that a different dimension is there within him, the dimension of quality. And that dimension changes only when your mind is positive. From tomorrow morning, the whole day, remember this. Whenever you feel something beautiful, satisfactory, something blissful, and there are many moments in a 24-hour day, there are many moments when the heaven is just near you, but you are so attached and involved with the hell, you go on missing it. The sun rises, the flowers open, the birds sing, and the breeze blows through the trees. And it is happening. A small child looks at you, and those innocent eyes, and a subtle feeling of bliss enters in you. Someone smiles. Look all around. Try to find out the blissful. Be filled with it. In that moment, forget everything. Be filled with it. Taste it. And allow it to happen to your whole being. Be one with it. The fragrance of it will follow you. It will go on resounding within you the whole day. And the resounding, the echoing feeling will help you to be more positive. This is accumulative. In the evening, if you start it in the evening you will be more open to the stars, to the moon, to the night, to the darkness. Do it for 24 hours. Experimentally. Just to have a feeling what it is. Once you can feel that the positive leads you to a different world, because you become different, you are not going to leave it. The whole emphasis has changed. from negative to positive. You look at the world in a different, in a new way. I am reminded of one anecdote. One of Buddha's disciples was taking leave from his master. The disciple's name was Purna Kashyap. He asked Buddha, "Where I am to go? Where I am to go to preach your message?" Buddha said, "You can choose yourself." So he said that I will go to a far corner of Bihar. It was known as Sukha. I will go to the Sukha province. But Buddha said, "It is better if you change your choice, because the people of that province are very cruel, violent, mischievous, and no one has yet dared to go there and to teach them violence, non-violence, love, compassion. So please change your choice." But Purna said, "Allow me to go there, because no one has gone there, and someone has to begin." Buddha said, "Then I will ask you 3 questions before I allow you to go. If the people of that province insult you, humiliate you, how will you feel it?" Poon said, "I will feel they are very good. They simply insult me. They are not beating me. They are good people. They could have beaten me." Buddha said, "Then the second question, if they start beating you, how you will feel?" Poon said, "I will feel they are very good people. They could have killed me. They are simply beating me." So Buddha said, "Now the third question, if they really kill you and murder you, in the moment when you are dying, how you will feel?" Poon said, "I will thank you and them. They have killed me. They have freed me of a life where many errors were possible. They have freed me from a life where many errors were possible. I will feel thankful." So Buddha said, "Now you can go anywhere. The whole world is heaven for you. Now there is no problem." The whole world is a heaven for you. You can go anywhere. With this mind, nothing is wrong with the world. With your mind, nothing can be right. With a negative mind, everything is wrong. Not that it is wrong. It is wrong because a negative mind can see only what is wrong. Wherever satisfaction is found, in whatever act, actualize this. This is a very delicate process, but very sweet also. And the more you proceed in it, the sweeter it becomes. You will be filled with a new sweetness and fragrance. Just look for the beautiful, forget the ugly. And a moment comes, the ugly also becomes the beautiful. Just look to the happy moment, and a moment comes, there is nothing which you can call unhappy. there is no unhappy moment then. Be concerned with the blissful, and sooner or later there will be no misery. Everything is beautified by a positive mind. The third technique, at the point of sleep, when sleep has not yet come and external wakefulness vanishes, at this point being is revealed. At the point of sleep, when sleep has not yet come and external wakefulness vanishes, at this point being is revealed. There are some turning points in your consciousness. At those turning points, you are nearer to your center than other times. You change gears, and whenever you change a gear, you pass through the neutral gear. That neutral gear is nearest. In the morning, when sleep is going, vanishing, and you are feeling awake, but not yet awake, just in the midpoint, there is a point when you are not asleep and not awake, just in the middle. You are in a neutral gear. From sleep to waking, your consciousness changes the whole mechanism. It jumps from one mechanism to another. Between the two mechanisms, there is no mechanism. There is a gap. Through that gap, you can have a glimpse of your being. The same happens in the night when you are again jumping from your waking mechanism to the sleeping mechanism, from your consciousness to the unconscious. For a single moment, there is no mechanism, no grip of the mechanism on you, because you have to take a jump from one to another. Between the two, if you can awake, between the two, if you can become aware, between the two, if you can remember yourself, you will have a glimpse of your real being. How to do it? While going to sleep, relax. Close your eyes. Make the room dark. Just close your eyes and start waiting. The sleep is coming. Just wait. Don't do anything. Just wait. Your body is relaxing. Your body is becoming heavy. Feel it. Have a feeling of it. Sleep has its own mechanism. It starts working. Your waking consciousness is vanishing. Remember, because the moment will be very subtle and the moment will be atomic. If you miss, you miss. It is not a very long period, a single moment, a very small gap when you will change from waking to sleep. Just wait, fully aware, go on waiting. This will take time. At least it takes 3 months. Only then you can have the glimpse one day of the moment which is just in the middle. So don't be in a hurry. You cannot do it just now. You cannot do it tonight. But you have to start. And you may have to wait for months. Ordinarily, within 3 months, one day, it happens. It is happening every day, but your waiting awareness and the meeting of the gap cannot be planned. It is a happening. You just go on waiting. Someday it happens. Someday, suddenly you become aware you are neither awake nor asleep. A very weird phenomena. You may even become afraid. Because you have known too. You know when you are asleep. You know when you are awake. You don't know a third point in your being. When you are neither. The first impact of it, you may get afraid and scared. Don't get scared and don't be afraid. Anything which is so new, unknown before, is bound to give a certain fear. Because this moment, when you will have again and again experienced, will give you another feeling also, neither alive nor dead, neither this nor that. This is an abyss. These two mechanisms are like two hills. You jump from one peak to another. If you remain in the middle, you fall into an abyss, and the abyss is bottomless. You go on falling. You go on falling. Sufis have used this technique. And before they give this technique to a seeker, they give one another practice also. That is just to safeguard. Whenever this technique is given in Sufi systems, before it, another practice is given. And that is to imagine with closed eyes that you are falling in a deep well, dark, deep, and bottomless. Just imagine falling in a deep well, falling, 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 eternally falling. There is no bottom. You cannot reach to the bottom. Now this fall cannot stop anywhere. You can stop. You can open your eyes and say no more. But this fall in itself cannot stop. If you continue, the well is bottomless and gets more and more darker. In Sufi systems, this well exercise, bottomless dark well exercise, is to be practiced first. It is good, helpful. If you have practiced it and you have realized the beauty of it, the silence, the deeper you go in the well, the more silent you become. Far away the world is left. And you feel that you have gone far away, far away, far away. And silence grows with darkness. And down there is no bottom. Fear comes into your mind. But you know this is just imagination. So you can continue. Through this exercise, you become capable of this technique. And then, when you fall between waking and sleeping in the well, it is no imagination. It is a real fact. And it is bottomless. The abyss is bottomless. That's why Buddha has called this nothingness, emptiness, sunyata. There is no end to it. Once you know it, you also have become endless. It is difficult to have this glimpse while awake. And it is impossible, of course, while you are asleep. because the mechanism is functioning. And it is difficult to detach yourself from the mechanism. But there is a moment in the night, in the morning, another moment. In 24 hours there are two moments when it is very easy. But one has to wait. At the point of sleep, when sleep has not yet come, and external wakefulness vanishes, at this point being is revealed. You know who you are. What is your real being? What is your authentic existence? We are false while we are awake. And you know it well. You are false while you are awake. You smile when tears would have been more real. Your tears are also not believable. They may be just a facet, ceremonial, a duty. Your smiles are false. And those who study faces, they can say that this smile is just a painted smile. There are no roots within. The smile is just on your face, on your lips. It is nowhere else into your being. There are no roots, there are no links. It is imposed. The smile is not coming from within to without. The smile has been forced from without. Whatsoever you say and whatsoever you act are false. And not necessarily that you are doing this false business of life knowingly. Not necessarily. You may be totally unaware. You are. Otherwise it will be very difficult to carry such a false nonsense continuously. It is automatic. This falseness continues while you are awake, and it continues even while you are asleep, in different ways then. Your dreams are symbolic, not real. This is surprising, that even in your dreams you are not real. Even in your dreams you are afraid, and you create symbols. Now the psychoanalysis goes on doing this business of analyzing your dreams. They have big business. Because you cannot analyze your own dreams. They are symbolic. They are not real. They say something only in metaphors. If you want to kill your mother, and get rid of her, you are not going to kill her even in your dream. You will kill someone else whose face looks like your mother. You will kill your aunt or someone else, but not your mother. Even in dream you cannot be real. Then a psychoanalyst is needed, a professional is needed to interpret. Or you may disguise the whole thing in such a way, even psychoanalysis is deceived. Your dreams are also totally false. If you are real while you are awake, your dreams will be real. They will not be symbolic. If you want to kill your mother, you will see a dream in which you kill your mother. And no interpreter is needed to show what your dream means. But we are so false. In dream you are alone, still afraid of the world and the society. To kill a mother is the greatest sin. And I wonder whether you have ever thought about it. Why? To kill a mother is the greatest sin. It is the greatest sin because everyone feels deep enmity towards his mother. It is the greatest sin. It is taught, your mind is conditioned, that even to think of harming your mother is a sin. She has given birth to you. All over the world, in all societies, there is not a single society on the earth which will not agree to this, that to kill a mother is the greatest sin. She has given you birth and you are killing her. But why this teaching? Deep down there is the possibility. Everyone goes against his mother of necessity. Because the mother has not only given birth to you, she has been the instrument of falsifying you. She has been the instrument of forcing you to be unreal. She has made you whatsoever you are. If you are a hell, she has a part in it, greatest part. If you are miserable, your mother is there somewhere hidden in it. Because the mother has given you birth, she has brought you up. Or, really, she has brought you down from your reality. She has falsified you. The first untruth happened between you and your mother. The first lie happened between you and your mother. The first lie. Even when there is no language and the child cannot speak, he can lie. The child sooner or later becomes aware that many of his things are not approved by his mother. Her face, her eyes, her behavior, her mood, everything shows that something in him is not accepted, appreciated. He starts suppressing. Something is wrong. There is no language yet. His mind is not functioning, but his whole body starts suppressing. And he begins to feel sometimes something is appreciated by the mother. He depends on the mother. His life depends on the mother. If the mother leaves him, he will be no more. His whole existence is centered on the mother. Everything the mother shows, does, speaks, behaves is significant. If the child smiles and the mother loves him and gives him warmth and milk and hugs him, he is learning politics. He will smile while there is no smile in him, because now he knows he can persuade the mother. He will smile a false smile. The liar is born. The politician has come into existence. Now he knows how to falsify. And this he learns with his relationship with his mother. This is the first relationship with the world. So when he will become aware of his misery, of his hell, of his confusion, he will find his mother is somewhere hidden. There is every possibility that you will feel inimical to your mother. That's why every culture insists this is the greatest sin, even to think, even in dream, you cannot kill your mother. I'm not saying that you should. I'm simply saying that your dreams are also false, symbolic, not real. You are so false that even you cannot dream a real dream. These are our two false faces, one while you are awake, one while you are asleep. Between these two false faces, there is a very small door, interval. In that interval, you can have a glimpse of your original face, when you were not related to your mother and throw the mother to the society, when you were alone yourself, when you were not this and that, there was no division. The real only was, there was no unreal. That face, that innocent face, you can have a glimpse between these two mechanisms. Ordinarily, we are not concerned with dreams. We are concerned with our waking hours. But psychoanalysis is more concerned with your dreams, not with your waking hours. Because they feel that in waking hours you are a greater liar. In dreams, something can be caught. You are less aware. And you are asleep. And you are not forcing things, you are not manipulating. So something real can be caught. You may be a celibate, a monk, in your waking hours, but the sex urge you have suppressed will force itself into your dreams. Your dreams are going to be sexual. It is very difficult to find a monk without sexual dreams. Rather impossible. You can find a criminal without sexual dreams. You cannot find a religious man without sexual dreams. A debauch may be without sexual dreams, but not so-called saints. Because whatsoever you force down while you are awake will erupt in your dreams and will color your dreams. Psychoanalysts are not concerned with your waking life because they know it is totally false. If something of the real can be glimpsed, it can be glimpsed only through your dreams. But Tantra says even dreams are not so real. They are more real. This will look paradoxical because we think dreams are unreal. They are more real than your waking hours because you are less on guard and the sensor is asleep and things can come up and the suppressed can express itself. Of course, symbolically, but symbols can be analyzed. And all over the world, human symbols are the same. You may speak a different language while awake, but while dreaming, you speak the same language. All over the world, the dream language is one. If sex is repressed, then the same symbols will come up. If food, the urge to eat, hunger is repressed, then the same symbols will come. Almost similar. The dream language is one. But still in dreams there are problems, because they are symbolic. And a fried may interpret in a different way. and a Jung in a different way, and an Adler is still in a different way. And if you are analyzed by 100 psychoanalysts, there will be 100 interpretations. You will be still more confused than you were before. More confused. 100 interpretations of one dream. Tantra says, neither waking nor sleeping, you are real. You are real only in between. So don't be concerned with the waking, and don't be concerned with dreaming and sleep. Be concerned with the gap. Be aware of the gap while passing from one state to another. Have a glimpse. And once you know when the gap comes, you become master of it. You have the key. You can open that gap anytime and enter into it. A different dimension of being, the real dimension, opens. The fourth, the last. Illusions deceive. Colors circumscribe. Even divisibles are indivisible. This is a rare technique, not much used, but one of the greatest teachers in India, Sankara, has used it. And Sankara has based his whole philosophy on this technique. You know his philosophy of Maya, illusion. Sankara says everything is illusory. Whatsoever you are seeing, hearing, feeling, all is illusion. It is not real. Because the real cannot be contacted by senses. You are hearing me, and I am seeing you hearing me. It may be just a dream. And there is no way how to judge whether it is a dream or not. I may be just dreaming that you are here and listening to me. How I am to know that this is real and not a dream? There is no way. Chuang Tzu is reported to have said, one night he dreamt that he had become a butterfly. In the morning he was very sad, and he was not the man with sadness. He was never known to be sad. His disciples gathered and they said, Chuang Tzu, Master, why you are so sad? Chuang Tzu said, because of a dream. The disciples laughed. They said, because of a dream and you are sad? And you have been always teaching us, don't be sad even if the whole world causes your sadness. And just a dream has caused your sadness. What are you talking? Chuang Tzu said, it is such a dream that it causes me very, very deep confusion, sadness, misery. I dreamed in my dream I have become a butterfly. So the disciples said, what is so much puzzling in it? Chuang Tzu said, no, this is the puzzle. If Chuang Tzu can dream that he can become a butterfly, why not the otherwise? The butterfly may dream she has become a Chuang Tzu. And now I am disturbed. What is right and what is wrong? What is real and what is unreal? Whether it was so that Chuang Tzu were dreaming of becoming a butterfly, or now the butterfly has gone to sleep and is dreaming that she has become a Chuang Tzu. If the one is possible, the other is possible. And it is said Chuang Tzu never could get over this puzzle. This remained for his whole life. How to decide I am not in a dream talking to you? How to decide you are not dreaming me talking? With senses, no decision is possible. Because while dreaming, dreams look real as anything. When you dream, you always feel it is real. When dreams can be felt real, why not reality can be felt as dream? Shankara says, with senses, there is no possibility to know whether the thing confronting you is real or unreal. And if there is no possibility to know whether it is real or unreal, Shankara calls it Maya. It is illusion. Illusion doesn't mean unreal. Illusion means the impossibility to decide whether it is real or unreal. Remember this. In Western languages, Maya has been translated very wrongly. And it gives the feeling in Western terms as if illusion means unreal. It is not. Illusion means the inability to decide whether the thing seen is real or unreal. This confusion is Maya. This whole world is Maya, a confusion. You cannot decide. You cannot be decisive about it. It is always escaping you, always changing, turning into something else. A fantasy, a dreamlike thing. This technique is concerned with this philosophy. Illusions deceive. Or that which deceives is illusory. Colors circumscribe. Even divisibles are indivisible. In this world of illusion, nothing is certain. This whole world is like rainbows. They appear, but they are not. If you are far away, they are. If you come nearer, they dissolve. The nearer you come, they are not. If you reach to the point where you were seeing a rainbow, it is no more there. The whole world is like rainbow colors. And it is so. When you are far away, everything is hopeful. When you come nearer, the hope disappears. And when you reach the goal, only ashes are there. Just a dead rainbow. The colors have disappeared. And things as they appear, they are not. As you feel them, they are not. Even divisibles are indivisible. Your whole mathematics, your whole calculating system, all your concepts are your philosophy, just becomes futile. If you try to understand this illusion, your very effort confuses you more. Nothing is certain there. Everything is uncertain. A flux of change. And with no possibility to decide whether this is true or false. What will happen if you take this attitude? What will happen? If really one gets deep in this attitude that everything which cannot be decided is illusory, you will automatically, spontaneously turn to yourself, then the only point where you can have a shelter is your own being. That is certain. Try to understand this. I may dream in the night that I have become a butterfly, and I cannot decide in that dream whether this is real or unreal. In the morning I may be puzzled like Chuan Tzu whether now the butterfly is dreaming. Two dreams, and there is no possibility to compare which is real and which is unreal. But Chuan Tzu is missing one thing: the dreamer. He is thinking only of dreams and comparing dreams and missing the dreamer, the one who dreamed that Chuan Tzu has become butterfly, and the one who is thinking that it may be quite the reverse, that the butterfly is dreaming, she has become Chuan Tzu. Who is this observer who was asleep and is now awake? You may be unreal, you may be a dream to me, but I cannot be a dream to myself. Because even for a dream to exist, a real dreamer is needed. Even for a false dream, a real dreamer is needed. Even a dream cannot exist without a real dreamer. So forget the dream. This technique says forget the dream. The whole world is illusion. You are not. So don't go after the world. There is no possibility to gain certainty there. And this appears now to be proved even by scientific research. Last three centuries, science was certain, and Shankara looked just a philosophical mind, poetic. For three centuries, science was certain, but now, these two last decades, science has become uncertain. And now the greatest scientists say nothing is certain, and with matter we will never be certain. Everything has become against uncertain. Everything looks like a flux, changing. Only appearance looks certain. The deeper you go, everything becomes uncertain, indefinite. Shankara says, and Tantra has always been saying before Shankara was born, Tantra was preaching one technique: the whole world is illusory, think it as a dream. If you can think it as a dream, and if you think at all, you will come to realize it is a dream. Then your whole focus of consciousness turns inwards, because there is a deep urge to find the truth, the real. If the whole world is unreal, then there is no shelter in it. Then you are moving, following shadows, and wasting time and life and energy. Then move inwards. One thing is certain: I am. Even if the whole world is illusory, one thing is certain: there is someone who knows this is illusory. The knowledge may be illusory, the known may be illusory, but the knower cannot be. This is the only certainty, the only rock where you can stand. This technique says, look at the world, it is a dream, illusory, and nothing is as it appears, just a rainbow. Go deep in this feeling. You will be thrown to yourself. That coming to one's own self, you come to a certain truth, to something which is indubitable, which is absolute. Science can never be absolute, it is going to be relative. Only religion can be absolute, because it searches not the dream, it searches the dreamer, not the observed, but the observer, the seer, one who is aware. Enough for today.